everyone. Namo Myoho Renge Kyo. Thanks for being here. Looks like I'm growing the beard again. I don't want to talk a lot about this, but just I don't want you to think I'm just too lazy to shave. I try every now and again to shave, but I have a lot of issues in my neck that actually shaving is quite painful. But I've been able to get along so far, just through my Daimoku and this practice with you. So thank you for that. And we'll just see how it goes. But for now, I just don't want you to think I'm just too lazy to shave. And I've been told the beard looks good. So so we'll go for it again. All right, let's continue with... I've been reading so many different things lately. I forgot what I was reading. Letter to the Brothers. Okay. This was done, he begins, by, or continues, I should say, this was done by Tuchun, Qi Yan, Fa Zhang, and Cheng Quan. Then Chia Xiang and Sheng Chuan were the evil companions who craftily deceived believers in the Lotus Sutra into falling back into the Wisdom Sutras. Obviously, as we continue this, you know, this is trying to bolster the brothers' practice and their situation, specifically with their father, who vehemently disagrees with them and tries to dissuade him at his sons at any opportunity to stop practicing Nichiren's doctrine and return to the true word or Ryokan temple near them. So we continue. So evil companions, I've changed the word evil in my annotated version of the Gosho, which will be available soon, to negative influence, because that's really what's, and it's negative influence with respect specifically to Lotus Sutra practice. Okay, so. Similarly, Xuan Chang and Sun In led them toward the Profound Secret Sutra, while Shan Wu Wei, Qing Kang Qi, Bu Kung, Kobo, Chikaku, and Qisho deceived them into following the Mahavarachana Sutra. Bodhidharma and Hui Kyo caused them to stray into the Zen school, while Shan Tao and Honen tricked them into believing the Meditation Sutra. So once again, we're revisiting that political reality of Buddhism as it spreads throughout Asia, meeting with the authoritarian governance in those respective states and countries, and trying to please the powerful lords. And here we're in the shogunate, so when his whole army, personal army, is samurai who you know, practice and spend their days slaughtering people who disobey, it's kind of, you know, you can kind of understand why even Buddhism, with its strict scholarship, has its proponents who bend it to the will of the lords and leaders just to gain favor, support, big thing. So yeah, this is the situation, right? So Nichiren certainly is not unaware of this. But he calls them out. He calls them out and he says, look, these are teachers of long traditions of this acquiescence to power, but it's not strictly Buddhism. And I don't care. I don't care if they try to kill me or send me to Sado or exile me, whatever. I will not be bent. I'm satisfying living the way that I'm living. I don't need to curry favor. I will strictly follow the sutras as writ. Okay? This is why they also often you'll see books on Nietzsche calling him the great reformer, or less flattering terms, but always as the as has happened several times throughout Buddhism. You can look at the Bodhisattva Nagarjuna's writings, and you can see historically how those in power fought tooth and nail against what he was saying. Same thing with Vasubandhu to a different degree, but Tendai, oh my God, he went through all sorts of hell. Because he was so skilled in his scholarship, was able to defeat seven different schools from the north of China and I think five different schools from the south, in front of the government authorities, and that way gained favor, although that wasn't his goal, of the authorities, and they left him alone. But I mean, it's always a battle. Corruption is just the nature of samsara, the nature of the greed and attachment of man, right? So, in Japan in the 13th century, situation is no different. In each case, the devil king of the sixth heaven, Daragutanamao, possessed these men of wisdom in order to deceive good people. This is what the Lotus Sutra means when it says in its fifth volume, quote, "Evil demons will take possession of others." And what are evil demons? Those powerful influences, right? Basically, the lower worlds of the 10 worlds, hunger, animality, hell, even humanity is a lower world because it's inactive. Okay? Going on, the great demon of fundamental darkness can even enter the bodies of bodhisattvas who have reached near perfect enlightenment and prevent them from attaining the Lotus Sutra's blessings of perfect enlightenment. How easily can he then obstruct those in any lower stage of practice? Think about that. Even very knowledgeable teachers, these aren't idiots that are being swayed this way. Think how much more difficult it is for your father, for you, for those of us of ordinary stature. Although I shouldn't use the word, in the context of Buddhism, ordinary are people who don't know about the Lotus Sutra, so I shouldn't use that word. But I think you know what I mean. How easily can he then obstruct those in lower stages of practice? The devil king of the sixth heaven takes possession of the bodies of wives and children and causes them to lead their husbands or parents astray. He also possesses the sovereign in order to threaten the votary of the Lotus Sutra, or possesses fathers and mothers and makes them reproach their filially devoted children. So, this teaching, these expedient means you'll hear in different ways throughout different writings. Basically, he's talking about our nature, our human avarice. Are the very fundament again of attachments always. I've been saying this lately because I've heard some questions about attachment. Buddhism is about detachment, not annihilation, not immolation. See, it's very easy, especially in the West, but obviously in Asia. I've had videos up about burning monks and how abhorrent that is to Buddhism. And really, 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 really profoundly sad. Because that's a misunderstanding of earlier teachings. But the idea is that this devil king of the sixth heaven, or Dairakutenomao, or whatever name you want to give it, it's a person in it, a personage, a personage, a person on it. There's a different word than personage, but anyway, it's a concept. It's a concept given a name. That's expedient means. Do you see? And it's a concept we all know, because of our egotistical attachment to thingness, to want to make everything we encounter persist. It's in the act of identifying this from that. The moment you identify this from that, you've made a decision, whether consciously or not, mostly subconsciously, because it's our nature, that because I've identified a difference, that difference and that identification must now stick. It must now continue through time. And by doing that, making that decision, we consider change abhorrent, because it attacks our sense of ownership of time, of permanence. Do you see what I mean? If I call this a microphone, then when I walk into this room tomorrow, there had best be this microphone that I have identified. But in actual fact, everything is in a constant state of change. Now, things like this microphone change very, very slowly. It may actually outlast my own lifetime. So to me, there's a lot of justification in my experience of life to identify this and be okay with that. Just that, those words, right? Even the grammatical term for the word the is, it just slipped my mind. It is, come on, Sylvain. It's the definite article. That's the definition of the word the definite article, right? I mean, we're so obsessed with labeling, and by labeling, we instantiate some sort of permanence in our mind. This is the first, or not the first, but it is the core of the problem that creates suffering. Because if we would just see things as the nature of its function, then we could be free to appreciate what it's doing in this moment. I'm not saying not to, you know, to walk in here tomorrow and be surprised that it's still here. That's not what I mean. It's about our attitude, our mental formations of these identities. That's what we have to catch. And it wouldn't be altogether a bad thing to walk into this room tomorrow and go, wow, look at all this stuff I can work with and I can make a video with and be excited about that. What's wrong with that? It's not delusional. What's delusional is to walk in here tomorrow and expect everything to work perfectly as it always has. It's just delusional. It's not real. So the devil of the sixth heaven is a personage, I'm really having problems with that word today. But it's a conceptual term to grasp the nature in our human lives of samsara that attaches us. And more to the point, it sways us. It influences us, because invariably we're going to be disappointed, because invariably the things that we want to make permanent and take for granted that will be permanent, when they show themselves not to be, when my computer doesn't work the way I expect it to, I get upset. Why am I upset? I should be going, wow, what are you going through, computer, right? What do I need to do to make you function as I'd like, as, you know, to the best of your ability? Because things change constantly. But all of that drama is in here. That's why I keep reminding you, Buddhism is about the mind. It's about our mental activity. So this is what Nichiren's talking about. He's saying, yes, this is terrible. This is something that you have to really kind of fight against. You have to take it to task. You have to correct it. But as much as it is disconcerting, It is an actual part in the nature of samsara. So don't be surprised by it. Simply see it for what it is. It may not sound that way, but this is what he's saying to the brothers. Right? He's saying, for instance, he mentions that taking possession of the wife and children, like some kind of poltergeist. That's not it at all. What he's saying is, the people closest to you will, in your mind, not some poltergeist from outside, but in your mind, there will manifest attachments that are unique to those closest to you, especially women and children, because the nature of your attachments, and if you're a woman to your siblings, to your lovers, the nature of that attachment is far more at the core of what it is to be samsaric, to be a human, right? Because we're designed to mate. We're designed to be sexual beings and social beings. But our sexual connections are profound. They exist at the level of survival, right? Lizard brain stuff. And our children are not far off from that because our progeny is an extension of our own lifetime. All of that, as you can hear, is about ego and attachment. Now, you might say that's okay. What Nichiren is saying is be aware that these are devices in your own mind that can lead you astray. Appreciate them for what they are, but don't be dragged around by them. Don't let them influence you away from what you know is correct and right. Ultimately, they will also benefit, even though in that moment, your mind may be playing these tricks on you, these delusions on you, right? Prince Siddhartha sought to renounce his title, but his son, Rahula, had already been conceived. His father, King Suddhodana, therefore admonished him to put off leaving to become a monk until after the child was born. The devil took advantage of the situation and delayed the childbirth for 6 years. So, how much of this is folklore and how much she may have miscarried, she may have then had to conceive again. That the point is that there was pressure from Siddhartha's father not to leave to do his research as a monk, to study, to understand how to end suffering and become an awakened person, right? He was stalling him. This is our future teacher, Shakyamuni Buddha, and his father was his greatest obstacle. No, you got this girl pregnant, you got to hang around till you get the child. Oh, this child, miscarried, or she wasn't able to carry it to term, try again. Well, wait a minute, the child's got, no. You're destined to have a child. You need to give me a grandson to take over the throne. You are not leaving. Right? So, talk about attachment. Okay, this is in the story, the very story of the founder of Buddhism. So, not only does he illustrate the strength of these mental delusions and influences, but that it's at the very core, so deeply into human samsaric life that even the founder of Buddhism couldn't escape it. So, lighten up a little bit, but don't stop moving against it. Know that this is part of samsara and that you shouldn't be deflated or dissuaded or poorly influenced by it. Just recognize it. That's always half the battle, right? Shariputra began his bodhisattva practice in the distant past, in the latter age after the passing of Zentara Buddha. He had already practiced for 60 kalpas when the devil king of the sixth heaven became worried that in another 40 kalpas, Sariputra would complete his practice. Oh no! The devil disguised himself as a Brahmin and begged Shariputra for his eyes. In response, Shariputra gave him one of his eyes, but from that moment, he lost his will to practice and then gave up, thereby falling into the hell of incessant suffering. for countless kalpas. 680 million lay believers in the age after the passing of the great adornment Buddha were deceived by the monk Shore of Suffering and three other monks so that they denounced the monk universal practice and as a result fell into the same hell for many kalpas as there are dust particles of the land. The men and women in the latter age of the passing of Lien Sound King Buddha followed the monk's superior intent, who observed the precepts, but mocked the monk Root of Joy, and so fell into hell, where they remained for countless kalpas. So now, at this point, you see that Nichiren is offering all of these stories from the expedient means of provisional teachings, earlier teachings, as an example and an encouragement, really, to these young brothers. To not just throw away the possibility that their father will ever, you know, start to practice correctly and attain Buddhahood in his lifetime, which he eventually did. So, sorry, spoiler alert. but, I mean, it was late in the father's life, and in great measure, if not completely, because of the brother's steadfastness in their Lotus Sutta practice, Myoho Renge Kyo. But it was because of letters like these that the brothers felt encouraged to continue, right? So Nichiren goes on. We'll go a little further. Yeah. It is the same with Nichiren's disciples and lay supporters. So now I've been talking about all this ancient history from the teachings. Now I'm going to apply it to today. This is what we're experiencing right now. And he goes on. The Lotus Sutra reads, quote, since hatred and jealousy toward this sutra abound even when the thus come one is in the world, how much more will this be so after his passing? We've heard this quote many times, right? It also reads, quote, it will face much hostility in the world and will be difficult to believe. Okay? So that's kind of a double-edged, I was going to say sword, but maybe that's not the right analogy. When he quotes, it will face much hostility in the world and be difficult to believe. We hear this all the time about the Myoho Renge Kyo, right? The Lotus Sutra. On the one hand, this tells the brothers, your father's just having a very difficult time believing. On the other hand, he's also lauding the brothers. He's going, look, this is really difficult to do. Give yourself, you know, some strength from this. Know that you are exceptional, because this is difficult to believe and you are doing it. So on the one hand, demonstrating the flaw of the father, on the other hand, lauding the practice of the son, the brothers, right? The Nirvana Sutra states, quote, by suffering an untimely death, rebuke, curses, or humiliation, beatings with a whip or rod, imprisonment, starvation, adversity, or other minor hardships in this lifetime, one can avoid falling into hell. The Parivana Sutra says, quote, they may be poorly clad and poorly fed, seek wealth in vain, be born to an impoverished and lowly family, or one with erroneous views, or be persecuted by their sovereign, they may be subjected to various other sufferings and retributions. It is due to the blessings obtained by protecting the law that they can diminish in this lifetime their suffering and retribution. So this particular quote is something that comes up in many many ways, not least of which I did it myself when I opened this video. Remember, I talked about shaving and the problems with my neck and the pains and so forth. And I really, you could not convince me otherwise. It is through my practice, my daimoku, and my practice such as this and other activities along with Gongyo, that I know that I've ameliorated my situation and kept at bay the effects and the progression of the illnesses that I'm incurring in my lifetime, in this lifetime. that I've gone on much longer than expected with these problems in my neck and so on and so forth. So I'm speaking directly to that quote. See, there's no magic here. There's no, I chant the Daimoku to my mandala of the Gohanzon. I practice as correctly as I can figure out to do. And so my life should be perfect. But my life is my life. It's samsaric. It's my human identity. So whatever karma, whatever energies were there that brought me into this samsaric existence, and whatever causes and karmic energies I've collected while I've been here, positive and negative, we're all human, they may add up to a lot of suffering because that's life, but I can minimize that suffering and even turn some of it into medicine, poison to medicine, right? Itaido, no, not Itaido, anyway. By my practice. So every moment is a benefit, is a weird term to use, but every moment is a precious validation of this practice. Moving on. These passages mean that we, who now believe in the correct teaching, in the past once committed the offense of persecuting its practitioners, and therefore are destined to fall into a terrible hell in the future. Does that mean that you kept somebody from practicing the Lotus Sutra even when you didn't know about it? No, that's not what it means. What it means is, again, the core of all of this teaching is our Buddha nature. However we get to it, and this Myoho Rengekyo is the ultimate tool to experience it immediately, we are in our own way through our lifetimes trying to find it, albeit as blind in a dark alley. Myoho Rengekyo is like the flashlight, right? That allows you to see the way out immediately. But all of us in samsara are here for this purpose, to awaken. So if maybe when you were a kid you were a bully, or maybe when you were a kid you were manipulative, or in some way, whether it was consistent or just in one event, you helped to dissuade someone else from their better nature. And in so doing, you made it more difficult for them to get on the right path toward their awakening. Just that is a cause made. And so we need to clean those causes up, that mental energy, that samsaric energy that hangs around and manifolds itself. By manifolds, I mean it leads to, we say this in many different ways outside of Buddhism, but the butterfly wing analogy. One little activity here then sets off a whole string of activities that have their own life and then, manifest other things. And it's impossible to tell what those little things that we've done, sometimes little, sometimes more significant, but they have repercussions. And that reverberation throughout life is something that must be accounted for. Fortunately, with Myoho Rengekyo, we can immediately find those things in our karmic past and abate them, cease their formations, and eventually repair the damage done without even seeing those people again and without even knowing what it is. What it is that we've done exactly. So that's what this is about. The benefits or the blessings gained by practicing the correct teaching, however, are so great that by meeting minor sufferings in this life, we can change the karma that destines us to suffer terribly in the future. So there it is in another way, right? As the sutra says, one's past slander may cause one to suffer various retributions. Such retributions is an odd way to put it. It's really just the effects of the ripple that we put into life. Such as being born into a poor family, or a family with erroneous views, or being persecuted by one's sovereign. A, quote, family with erroneous views, end quotes, means one that slanders the correct teaching, and, quote, persecution by one's sovereign means to live under the reign of an evil influence or a negative influence ruler. These are two sufferings confronting you now. In order to expiate the sin of your past slanders, you are opposed by your parents, who hold mistaken views and must live in an age of a ruler who persecutes the votary of the Lotus Sutra. The sutra makes this absolutely clear. Never doubt that you slandered the correct teaching in the past. You have doubt about this. If you have doubt about this, you will be unable to withstand the minor sufferings of this life. Then you may give in to your father's opposition and desert the Lotus Sutra against your will. Remember that if this happens, not only will you fall into hell, but also your precious parents will fall into the great Avicii hell, causing all of you indescribable grief. The essential thing is a great resolve to attain the way. You must be steadfast. The determination that you must have mentally to stay the course, myoho renge kyo, is absolutely critical to your immediate enlightenment, to your experience of your Buddha nature. Without that resolve, without that determination, then you're just fooling around. You're playing cards. And therefore, you're going to get the consequences. The consequences are built in to samsara. You're in it. You're the result of your karma. And you came through your parents because the karma was a good fit. So they share in many ways the karma that you're going through, which should give you a nice red flag. It says, look, this is potentially you. In some form, we are not our parents, but we inherit a lot of their traits, we call them, but those traits are built of karmic cause. So yeah, we're very related causally, karmically. Let's go on a little further. Next paragraph. Both of you have continued believing in the Lotus Sutra. Thus, you are now ridding yourselves of your great offenses from the past. For example, the flaws in iron come to the surface when it is forged. Put into flames, a rock simply turns to ashes, but gold becomes pure gold. This trial, more than anything else, will prove your resolute mind and conviction genuine, and the 10 demon daughters of the Lotus Sutra will surely protect you. The demon who appeared to test the Bao, Snow Mountains, the boy, Snow Mountains, was actually Chakra. The dove saved by the king Shibi was the heavenly king Vaishravana. It is even possible that the 10 demons, demon daughters, have possessed your parents and are tormenting you in order to test your resolve. Any weakness in resolute mind will be a cause for regret. The cart that overturns on the road ahead is a warning to the one behind. In an age like this, no one can help but thirst for the way. You may hate this world, but you cannot escape it. The people of Japan are certain to meet with terrible misfortune in the immediate future. The revolt that broke out on the 11th day of the second month in the ninth year of Bunei, 1272, was like blossoms being lashed by a gale, or like bolts of silk burning in an inferno. Who can help but abhor a world like ours? So he's commiserating a little bit with them, but because he wants them to understand that whatever misery they're personally incurring and feeling, that they're not unique, that this is ongoing all over Japan and all over the world. He wants to deeply encourage them to say, look, if you just stay strong in your practice, this will change. One more. In the 10th month of the 11th year of Bunyei, the people on Iki and Tsushima Islands were slaughtered at one stroke. How can we say that this is of no concern of ours? That's another interesting point. In other words, if you find yourself wallowing a bit in your own circumstance, a little self-pity, we all go through it, right? Remember that today in Yemen, we have a huge humanitarian disaster. It's so far away, but children are starving to death. People are being slaughtered all over religious and political grounds. Religious, really. It's disgusting that human beings haven't evolved beyond this plaintive, childish, snot-nosed little war thing where we slaughter others because they just don't believe the way we do. He doesn't think the way I do. Kill him. How is it that after thousands and thousands of years of evolution, it hasn't occurred to us that that is a bull crap way to live and treat others? It ultimately doesn't make us better. What kind of superiority slaughters everything around it? At some point, doesn't it become obvious that without anything around you, there's nothing to be superior over or of? That's baloney. It's such crap. And it continues in our modern society. But here it is, samsara, right? So what Nichiren points out is the suffering of those in Yemen is no less ours. We have this tremendous protection of distance and circumstance that provides a different aura, a different experience of our lives, but it isn't separated from that experience. We need to own that in our hearts. That's a different way of looking at the world, isn't it? That's Buddhist compassion. The realization that this isolated self is a delusion, that this self is a privileged position of selfness, which is universal. And believe it or not, not paying attention to that or feeling in some way inspired to do something about it is to be complicit in it happening. So this goes back to earlier. By shutting it out and pretending it doesn't exist, we are actually complicit in it happening. That's karmic. That affects your life and mine. So when we go to Gohanzan and we chant Namo Myo Renge Kyo, we have to consider that it's not just poor little me that's awakening, but that the awakening of the abhorrent crap that's going on in Yemen right now must stop. In Myanmar, in Philadelphia, everywhere. Chant with that sort of Ichinen, that kind of determination, that kind of resolve. That's Bodhisattva way. It's so easy in a fortunate country, even in the turmoil we're in today in North America, we have so much privilege. Privilege in the form of protection from the most base tendencies in human beings, in samsara. And there's not a day that goes by that I'm not talking about guilt or shame. I'm talking about focused energy to cleanse this out of life on earth. Because it's all our lives. Our environment is you and me. With that kind of determination, your Buddhahood is certain. It's absolutely certain. But it also changes the nature of the game, doesn't it? So if you're asking yourself, why isn't this practice working for me right now? Well, you just answered it with that question. Because it's not just about you. Because it's bigger than you. And you have ties karmically that go in places you can't even imagine. But at some level, we're all connected, so we're all the same person. So looking at the largesse of that, take that to Guanzhen and chant. With that kind of awareness, you will awaken. You will awaken a Buddha nature that is far more expansive than just little old me. Okay? And this is what Nichiren is using to encourage these brothers. Giving them the nature of the obstacle as it's bigger than you think, but also giving them the confidence that you can change this. Just you. How amazing is that? This is the power of the Lotus Sutra. This is the power of Myoho Renge Kyo. It's massive. So I'll go on a little further here. The soldiers who went off to confront the invaders, how forlorn they must be fighting the Mongols. This is actually happening right now in his time. They had to leave behind their aged parents, small children, young wives, and cherished homes to go out and defend a sea to no avail. If they see clouds on the horizon, they imagine them to be the enemy's banners. If they see fishing boats, they think they're Mongol warships and are paralyzed with fear. Once or twice a day, they climb the hills to look over the sea. Three or four times in the middle of the night, they saddle up and unsaddle their horses. Though still alive, they feel as if they were in the world of Asuras, right? All this and the hardships you have suffered as well can ultimately be blamed on the fact that this country's ruler has become the enemy of the Lotus Sutra. His opposition was instigated by the slanderers of the correct teachings, particularly the observers of the precepts and the Nembutsu and true word monks. You must persevere through this trial and see for yourselves the blessings of the Lotus Sutra. I, Nichiren, will also emphatically call on the heavenly gods. Now more than ever, you must neither show nor feel fear. And I think on that note, I'll pause. So could there be a more exigent plea from Nichiren for not only followers, but as I've stated earlier, these are very important people in the government of Kamakura, in the government of Japan at the time. Their father is very important. But because of their position, they're even more exposed to these bad influences that are trying very hard to assert their power. So the nature of the brother's struggle is, yes, it's familial, but it includes the karma of Japan, because that's the position of influence they're in, right? So the negative influences around them are going to come from much more than just their own past, but the past of Japan. So this is why Nichiren is imploring them, stay the course, this will change. Through your actions, it will change. Profound encouragement. But the nature of the battle, the same for all of us, right? So, quite a go show. And we'll pursue and we'll go further into it with a lot more examples. Very interesting. From this, we learn a lot of the expedient means and provisional teachings of earlier sutras. Nichiren is just an amazing scholar when it comes to this. And we can, again, appreciate and find insights that apply to our own lives in, you know, different terms, different people, different situations. But eventually, as we go through this this Gosho, I encourage you to stick around, because if not already, some of these little stories and snippets will mirror your own life, and you will gain your own personal insights to help keep your practice strong. So it's no idle statement that I've made in the past. I practice Buddhism because I want to change the world. I'm not egomaniacal in any way. I'm just, by saying that, I'm really acknowledging how much of a task it is for me to change my own life, to awaken completely my Buddha nature. I've had many, many moments, and will have many, many more. Always with my mandala. But even when I do these videos, I my life feels more energized and I'm happier. So for that, I thank you for your support and your participation. Stay strong in your practice. It does work. How's that for a rounding endorsement? But no, wait, you also get, no, sorry, Namo Myoho Renge Kyo. Have a great day. See you next time.